Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you could join me tonight. I'm going to have some conversation tonight with Shelley because we've done some more research on the story behind the human trafficking. If you joined us the week before last, we started talking about this, and I had some people call me and tell me, you know, that they were concerned about this, and that most of them were very young people. So when I looked it up online, I found all the information about actual trafficking of human beings, which meant from one country to another. So I had read some statistics and shared them with everybody, and they were, to say the least, disarming and alarming and disappointing. But then I got a call from some other young people who said they wanted to talk about the fact that a lot of the street kids that are runaways, are kids that have been taken by a parent that perhaps didn't have custody of them and then came to someplace like Florida. This happens a lot in the state of Florida, and brought them here and then left them here. And I said, I would love to talk about that. So Shelley did some research. I did some research. And again, the statistics are very alarming. But I do want to share this with everybody before we get started on this. Years ago, when my kids, who are now in their mid-40s, were still in school, they brought home a boy and a girl. I think at that point in time, they were like 15 and 16. And they told me that they had just moved here from another state because their dad was going to work here in South Florida. And both of them became friends with my kids. And the oldest boy was a very nice young man, very sweet. But they were very strict with him. He had to be home every night. There were some problems between him and his mom, who was his stepmom. And some stories got back to me that were borderline abusive. So I went over one day and just introduced myself, just to say, you know, I'm Spike and Mike and Diana and David's mom, and, you know, your kids come over all the time, and I just thought it would be nice if I met you. So we became friends. I thought they were good people. I thought that perhaps their way of raising their kids was a little tougher than mine, but, you know, different strokes. So they had no other friends, and the job didn't work out very well for the dad. And they called me one day and said that they needed my help. And I said, sure. They said, would you give us a ride to the Miami airport? We're being flown now to New York City to do a different job. I said, okay. What about the kids? And the father said to me, well, we're taking our daughter, but we're not taking our son. We found out that he's smoking pot. We want nothing more to do with him. He was 16, not quite 17. And I said, well, what do you mean you're going to leave him here? Yeah, he thinks he's a grown-up. He thinks he can do whatever he wants, so we're leaving him here. So I was mortified, but I just figured I'd let him stay with us. So I drive them to the airport. I get them to the airport, and they announce to me at the airport that they'd like me to take care of their dog as well. So I drive home with a dog and a child. And to make a long story short, this young man never reunited with his parents. His sister ended up coming back to Florida and staying here and marrying here. and this young man has married since I ended up keeping an eye on him. He did move out on his own by the time he was 17, but I got him a job, and I stayed close to him. So I know that in Florida, these kind of things are really happening on a steady basis. And then I worked in Fort Lauderdale for a long time in the 90s on the strip between Sunrise and Las Olas. And there was a hostel behind the hotel that I was managing. All kinds of kids that stayed there that were parentless. And many of them, average age was 15. So here in the state of Florida, it's very prevalent, for one thing because of the warm weather, for another thing because of the pull of being able to find work in restaurants and the beach and everything that Florida stands for. So it is a big thing here, and it's probably a lot worse than it was in the 90s. So we are going to talk about that. I see that Shelley has joined us, and she has some information to share with us, and we will discuss this. Hi, Shell.
Hey, Rain.
How are you?
How are you doing? Doing good?
I'm good. Yes, I finally got my new washer and dryer today, so I'm in a mound of laundry, but other than that, I'm well.
Oh, well, now I know where to drop mine off. I've been looking for somebody to bring it up.
I would never even notice. I'll tell you right now, I would never even notice. We have a pool table that won't see cue sticks or a pool ball until the end of next week, probably. It is filled with laundry. 5 days with no washer and dryer in a house with 10 people is, like, very scary. Very scary.
Oh, my gosh. Yep, so, I hear you.
But we're washing our way out as we speak. So, so did you hear the story that I told? I've probably shared that story with you before about these two young kids and through the life that I've had here in Florida, which is over 30 years now. This time, there's been many young people who have lived with us. For many different reasons.
Well, you remember that's how I got my dog, Hank. Remember that big, beautiful, docile, yellow lab that I had?
Yes, I remember Hank.
He was just the friendliest animal ever. Well, the way I got him is from one of these throwaway kids. This kid was a friend of my nephew's who was always coming over to the house with this dog. And every time he would come over, he would ask us if we would give the dog something to eat, and he would eat it, and then he'd throw up right away. And I said, "What's wrong with your dog? I mean, he just looked awful." And he says, "Well, he was only a 6-month-old puppy, and he hadn't eaten in like 3 days." But it turns out the kid hadn't eaten in 3 days either. But he was always just looking for food for the dog, you know. So we ended up taking him in, letting him live with us for a few months. And I finally approached the kid one day, and I said, "Look, I'll take your dog to the vet and get him healthy, but then he's my dog." I said, "Because you can't even take care of yourself right now." I said, "So we'll help you out, but if I get the dog," and that's how I ended up with Hank. I did take him to the vet. He was really messed up. The kid ended up living with us for months until he got on the feet and got a job, and then I ended up keeping the dog and raising him, and then he was my best friend for many, many years. But that's how that all happened. This kid was a throwaway. His parents just basically kicked him out on the street, and he would go days on end without eating.
Yeah. I don't understand how anybody can do that. That's why, you know, when people tell me sad stories about animals, I listen to them, and it breaks my heart, too, because, you know, I'm an animal lover as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I say to everybody, you know, if they do the same with their children, you really can't expect them to understand the relationship between them and their pet. It's too bad, but it's kind of the way of the world. And so many people are just so totally self-centered. It's just all about how comfortable they can be and what can be good for them. And I just had this conversation with one of my grandchildren in the last few days, and I said, if you spend your life considering yourself the only one that matters, you'll never be happy. For one thing, happiness when you're all alone is not really achievable. And always searching for that place of blissful joy and happiness comes with other people, no matter what anybody tells you. Doesn't matter where you live, how you live, how much money you have, how beautiful you are, nothing. If you're all alone, you're all alone. And there's nothing happy about that. So caring about other people and doing for other people and having empathy, sympathy, and compassion for other people is really the most joyful thing you can do for yourself.
That's right.
So,
it's almost cliche to say it, but it's very, very true, regardless of how cliche it is. But when you share some sort of an unhappiness or a sadness or a stress with just one other person, it actually lightens your load. And when you share something that's happy or exciting, like when I've come back from my trip and I've told a few people about it, it actually excites you more. It makes the event more enjoyable. Every time you tell it, it starts, uplifting you again. So it's like I said, it's almost cliche, but it does cut your sorrows in half and doubles your happiness when you just share it with one other person.
Absolutely. And listen to other people's stories and their sharing. I mean, we've talked about this before, all of us ladies over the age of 50 that gather on weekends very often. There's anywhere from 3 or 4 of us to 10 or 12 of us. And that's what we do. We tell stories. We laugh about our lives and share some things that may be sad, but more often than not, some things that are good to share and make us all happy and giggle. And it's a wonderful thing. So let's talk about some of these kids. I'd love, you told me that you had something that you really wanted to read. Are you still up for that?
Oh, sure, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I had done some research because I really wanted to know what the definition of human trafficking was. And we seem to were going back, back and forth a little bit. So I found about a half a dozen websites, but I printed something off of two of them. So I'll read it briefly, and then we can discuss it afterwards.
Okay.
Right. One of them is called the Florida Coalition Against Human Trafficking. And I'm going to read this one first because it's just a short two paragraphs, and then I'll go into what I printed off the California site. But the Florida Coalition site said that human trafficking, involves the commercial exchange and exploitation of humans, including forced prostitution and pornography, involuntary labor, servitude, and debt bondage. Human trafficking is a growing problem worldwide, recently rising to the second most common criminal activity behind the illegal drug trade. So there is a drug connection with it. Florida has been identified as a hub for human trafficking activity, citing one of the highest incidences of human trafficking in the country. Yeah, we got a couple of cats next to me that are arguing. I'm going to close my window.
I hear that. I think they're critiquing
your
information.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. So, all right. All right, activity citing one of the highest incidences of human trafficking in the country. So they're saying Florida is the hub for this. This crime affects all types of individuals, both foreign and domestic. Currently, and a couple of these are the statistics you had read last week. Currently, there are approximately 27 million people enslaved throughout the world, with 2.5 million located right here in the United States. Each year, 600,000 to 800,000 more people are being trafficked worldwide. Human slavery was supposed to end with the Emancipation Proclamation, and unfortunately, this shows it is still alive and flourishing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's from the Florida Coalition Against Human Trafficking. And then if you were to go to that site, there's all kinds of links for our mission, join the fight, activism, and things like that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The other site is from the Office of the Attorney General in the state of California. And it starts out with some similar facts, but then goes into more definitions and even goes into the difference between human trafficking and smuggling. So let me read this. What is human trafficking? Human trafficking is a modern form of slavery. It involves controlling a person through force, fraud, or coercion to exploit the victim for forced labor, sexual exploitation, or both. Human trafficking strips victims of their freedom and violates our nation's promise that every person in the United States is guaranteed basic human rights. It is also a crime. Approximately 3 out of every 1,000 persons worldwide were in forced labor at any given point in time between 2002 and 2011. Victims of human trafficking include not only men and women lured into forced labor by promise of a better life in the United States, but also boys and girls who were born and raised here in California. Victims of human trafficking represent a range of backgrounds in terms of age, nationality, socioeconomic status, and education. But one characteristic that is usually shared is some form of vulnerability, and that's an important thing to understand. I'm going to read that again. But one characteristic that they usually share is some form of vulnerability. They are often isolated from their families and social networks. In some cases, victims are separated from their country of origin, native language, and culture. Victims who are undocumented immigrants often do not report abuses to the authorities out of a distrust of law enforcement and or fear of arrest, injury to family members, deportation, or other serious reprisals. Many domestic victims of sex trafficking are underage runaways and or come from backgrounds of sexual and physical abuse, including incest, poverty, and addiction. So a lot of these kids that are runaways end up in this human trafficking arena. So in definitions of human trafficking are the following. The California legislature defined human trafficking as all acts involved in the recruitment, abduction, transport, harboring, transfer, sale, or receipt of persons within national or across international borders through force, coercion, fraud, or deception to place those persons in situations of slavery or slavery-like conditions, which include forced labor or services, such as forced prostitution or sexual services, domestic servitude, bonded sweatshop labor. This is the first place where I actually heard them use that word, but I know that the sweatshop labor is something that's still, very active in today's society. So they actually put that in here. Bonded sweatshop labor and or other debt bondage. As codified in the California Penal Code, anyone who deprives or violates the personal liberty of another with the intent to obtain forced labor or services is guilty of human trafficking. And then it goes on with a little bit more. I want to tell you here where it talks about smuggling and the differences between that, because now it goes on a little bit more in detail. The differences between human trafficking and smuggling. Though they are often confused, human trafficking and smuggling are separate and fundamentally different crimes. Human trafficking is a crime against the person, whereas smuggling is a crime against the state. Smuggling occurs when a person voluntarily requests or hires a person, known as a smuggler, to transport him or her across a border for a fee. At least theoretically, a person who is smuggled into the United States is free to leave upon payment of a prearranged fee, while a victim of human trafficking is enslaved to supply labor or services. Unlike smuggling, the crime of human trafficking does not require travel or transportation of the victim across borders. Thus, human trafficking can and does occur domestically within victims who are born and raised in California and other states. So in other words, you can be a victim of human trafficking without ever leaving where you were born, the country you were born, the state you were born. Human trafficking is just means that you are enslaved to perform labor or services against your will. mm-hmm. and fraudulently and all of that.
Now, did you find out anything about when that behavior, when like like say somebody takes a like a 13-year-old, but it's a parent, it's a legal parent, it's a, the dad or the mom, and there's a divorce or a separation involved, and custody was awarded to the other parent, and the other parent takes the child and does that with them as well. I mean, I've read stories of fathers that actually pimp out their daughters and do things like that. Did you read any statistics about that?
Well, because that's actually multiple criminal acts. Okay, mm-hmm. if the parent is doing that to their own child, it's still human trafficking. If the parent
right.
is then taking the daughter and, like you said, pimping her out or something, yes, that's human
mm-hmm.
trafficking, regardless of
right.
who the perpetrator is.
Right.
You know, and then there's other illegal acts there as far as you know, taking the child away from the from the other parent and things like that.
Oh yeah.
But yeah,
right.
that would absolutely be human trafficking in addition to other criminal acts. Sure.
Well,
anytime
because I
you
didn't
take an individual and you put them into any kind of forced labor, whether it's labor like in a sweatshop or physical labor as in prostitution or pornography, it's human trafficking. Whether
mm-hmm.
you've crossed international borders, whether you've crossed state borders, that's what human trafficking is, putting someone into forced labor.
Right. Right, exactly. But you didn't read any statistics about how many of them were actual parents or the other half of a couple or anything like that. I kind of went in search of that, and I couldn't find anything that actually gave me.
Although I know that happens a lot, because there's such a strong connection with the drug, trade, I
mm-hmm.
think that that's going to be the lower percentage, that it's going to be family members, because that's usually done for other reasons. That's usually
mm-hmm.
done because the person wants to hurt their spouse or because they're just, they're already into that lifestyle and they don't really have any respect for their children. They're looking at them as a means to an end, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But because there is such a strong connection to drugs, the drug trafficking as well, I'm not so sure the percentage is going to be that high of it being a family member, a parent.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be interested to look that up. I'll see if I can do some research on that as well.
Yeah, I would kind of like to know because, they're the stories that are honestly, I mean, all of them are say such bad things about us human beings, hands down. But that, because I know it exists, because I've talked to young people, I've talked to old people that have gone through that. The biggest scenario is a dad with a daughter, but I've heard of it a lot of times, and I was kind of surprised that even though I did see some information in regard to custody battles and things like that, and things like this kind of lead in to some of these kind of stories, I didn't see any real statistics, and I would like to know, because it's one of those kind of things that I think if we talk about that, like last night with Linda and the conversations we had with her about the really, really young children,
right,
and how soon we can start explaining to children what isn't okay. And not that I want to, start a company that warns kids about their parents who might not be who they're supposed to be. That's not my thought plan. But still being able to recognize when something isn't normal when you're
right.
talking to really young kids. If you feel insecure and you're five or four and something's just not right because they have wonderful intuition, kids do, then I would like to be able to, with some of the stories and some of the things that Linda has dedicated this part of her life to, that's an important issue. I think I told the story a couple times about my parents and my grandparents always telling me to never take a ride with a stranger. and that if somebody approached me and wanted me to ride in the car with them someplace or go someplace with them, and now we're talking about the 50s. It was a lot different then than it is now. But they still told me about that, and my sister and my brother. And we were all told to be careful with that. And then I'm at the corner store, and the insurance man is on his way to our house and asks me if I want to take a ride. And I was scared to death, and I knew this insurance man. But I would not get in the car with him because my mother told me not to do that. And I had to be at least five, otherwise I wouldn't have been allowed to walk down the hill and go to the store. So I think about that, and I think to myself, you know, if she hadn't told me until I was 8 or 9, it wouldn't have made such a big impact on me, because at 8 or 9 I would have decided, Mom knows I know the insurance man, and I'd have gotten in the car with him.
Right.
See, the difference between that little bit of difference in that age span there could be the most important fact that we shouldn't miss.
So,
one
of the things you're talking about right now, and that one statistic that I read again, that most of the victims of human trafficking are people that are vulnerable, and the young people are from backgrounds that, you know, they're runaways from situations of incest or physical abuse. And it's like, you know, when I read that it's all tragic. It all affects me. But I'm reading that and I'm like, wow, these kids are going from the fire into the frying pan. It's like, you know, here they run away from their homes because it's an untenable situation. They're being, you know, they're suffering incest or they're being physically abused, and then they get picked up by a human trafficker that just you know, expands on the problem. It, you know, that really got to me.
Well, I've always equated it to, you know, in the streets, the vultures. You know, I get a vision of cartoon vultures sitting in a tree, just waiting for the little bunnies to come hopping through. And I see those kind of scenarios even with adults. So I guess what I think is important with this is, because of talking last night with Linda about the really young people, and the fact that I talk so much to AJ, and AJ is so upfront about so many things that he kind of like just tells me things. And
He's like a six-year-old scholar.
He really is. I mean, you know, and maybe because we've spent a lot of time together talking, and like a lot of times when I'm doing the radio show, he sits in here in the chair and just listens to me. So he grasps a little bit of the danger that's involved here. And it's a hard thing to explain danger to a child without making them paranoid.
Right.
You know, so there is a fine line there, and that's why I loved what Linda's doing, because she's doing it with creatures and stories, and that's the perfect way to do it. But you don't want to make a child afraid of everything and of everyone.
Right.
And you want to explain danger is something that needs to be respected and be, you know, is in you someplace inside, so that if a little something tells you, you know, remember on Lost in Space, danger, Will, there's danger, you know. I'd love it if I could program a little kid with that something just comes on, danger, without making them be afraid of everything.
Right.
You know, without making them be afraid of everything. And then, of course, what Izzy talks about when he talks about teaching them to take their own situation into their own hands, I love that. But so much of that part of this journey is going to depend on what happened in year 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Exactly.
As to whether or not that child can take that responsibility. So I'm excited that so many things
people,
like this are pulling together, you know?
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize how much of a person's personality is formed at those younger ages. I think most people, or at least a lot of people I talk to, they think that you develop when you're in your late teens, and that's not correct. You are really developing the direction of your personality when you're very young, when you're in that, you know, 3, 4, 5 age. You're kind of getting where you're going to do the jump off to create your personality from at that point. So if you're not helping a child at that young age to have a sense of confidence and feeling good about who they are and their own uniqueness, that's only going to perpetuate into their teen years. It's not going to change. That's where they're going to launch off from. And I think a lot of adults don't realize that. That's why they always think, oh, it's a phase, they'll grow out of it. No, it's not a phase. They're not going to grow out of it. If there's not something proactively done to redirect that child, that's the direction they're going in for their teenage years, right into their adult years.
That's right. That's exactly right. And the fact that you have an opportunity, and mind you, you know, I before I get too far into this on a tangent, because I do believe in it, I want everybody to know that when you have a child that's 5 and 6 and who listens to you intently and seems to be on the same wavelength as you, and they get to be 17 or 18 and get involved in any number of things that are out there for everybody, it doesn't mean you're not going to have any trouble. It doesn't mean that they may not get involved in something that you don't want them to get involved in. So, you know, when we're talking like this, I don't want anybody to be under because I can just imagine mom sitting by saying, oh, yeah, I did all that. My kid's doing this. My kid's doing that. I get that. I know that firsthand. So this is, it's not about that. But it is about setting them up for, if nothing else, for the recovery afterwards.
After
getting, you know, involved in something that they shouldn't be involved in and being able to recover from it. That kind of strength carries you through all those kind of situations. And it's still a good thing to make sure that your child understands the difference between right and wrong, the difference between good and bad, and the difference between a friend and somebody who's not a friend. And that can be family members as well. So I do think that in the streets of Florida, you know, that it's become awful. If you are – one of the things before I forget about it, when you talked about going into servitude and working in sweatshops. Do you know, when I was a kid, when I was 16 years old, I remember, we lived here in Florida then, in Miami, and I remember there was a big to-do about one, there's a lot of fabric shops, sewing shops and stuff like that in Miami for designers. I don't know if it's as big an industry as it was in the 60s. Now, it may not be. It may be all overseas because they can get cheaper labor and everything. But when I was a kid, I remember at like age 15 and 16, one of my girlfriend, her father owned one of those places. And he got in a lot of trouble for taking young Cuban kids who were coming in droves in the 60s to Miami.
Oh, wow.
And he would get mothers and daughters and stuff like that. Sometimes the daughters would only be 12 years old to work in these sewing places. And they'd work for like $3 for the day. He'd pay them.
Oh.
And if they were willing to take the pay and not complain, you know, until people started blowing whistles and everything, he didn't get in any trouble.
Wow.
And I think in the long run, he didn't get much
anything.
Trouble to begin with. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that had, I mean, and look at a few years ago, all the trouble with Oprah. Oprah was doing something and found out that, but, you know, it's also acceptable. So, you know, sometimes things get out of hand and the media gets involved and try to, you know, make it a lot more exciting or a lot more dangerous or something than what it really is. But my part about the kids is, here's what I've seen in the streets of Fort Lauderdale and in Miami. Lots of prostitution with kids as young as 11 and 12.
Lots of crack use.
Lots of methamphetamines and things like that, so that they can live the life that they believe is the only life that they're ever going to know. And there are safe havens. There's Harbor House, as I mentioned a couple nights ago. And there is 211 that a kid can call if they think, you know, that they're ready to make a change and aren't too afraid. A lot of times, you know, even awful things get comfortable, Shelley.
I know.
Well, because people
even,
are familiar.
Even awful things.
A lot of times people are, even though they're miserable and they're unhappy and they're suffering, they know what to expect every day. Sometimes people are afraid of the unknown more than the suffering that they're already familiar with, which is a shame.
Well, that's why so many people stay in marriages that aren't right for them, because of the worry of trying to start all over again, and the fact that as bad as it is, at least you know what's going to happen every day.
Exactly, exactly. They'll choose the familiarity over the unknown because, oh my God, it might even get worse, you know, and that's
exactly
what the fear. It could get better, but it could get worse, and at least they're managing day to day, you know, because they know what to expect, and it's heartbreaking.
It is. It's also very sadly and incredibly normal for a lot of people to feel that way.
That's right.
The you know, on another note, because we're talking about young people and the different things that happen, have you paid any attention to the mother and the teachers and everything that talk about these two young men that set off the bombs in Boston?
No, I haven't seen any of that. I've been getting home too late at night. I haven't even seen any. So what happened? What have they been saying?
Well, they obviously did, you know, what everybody thinks they did. But the youngest boy, the boy that's still alive, the youngest brother, is only like 19. And the mom stands there and she's like, I know my children, and they just wouldn't do this. They show pictures of this young man in school playing ball and doing this and doing that. And one of the teachers speaks up and says he's been a wonderful student. They've lived in that area for 10 years, and the only thing they can figure out is that the older brother made a trip, you know, to homeland, and when he came back, things were different, and that he must have led the younger brother down this path. But again, if you, not one person that I've seen on television talking about this young kid. The older brother, it's a little bit different, although a lot of people said good things about him and couldn't figure out what happened. But obviously something happened. But if you hear them talk, and I don't just mean the mom was adamant, of course, as I would be, as any mom would be, but teachers and neighbors, all these people said, I'm in shock. He was a nice boy. You look at the pictures of him. I mean, he doesn't look like the poor kid that went in and shot up the school with the red pink hair and the crazy eyes and everything. He looked really normal, and I thought to myself,
the two boys, because I've missed the updates on this. I literally haven't watched news in the last probably 4 or 5 days. So the two boys that have been found out to be responsible for this were they killed in the bombing, or are they still alive?
No, they did not get killed in the bombing. They left the site. That was what drew attention to them when they watched the videos that were taped at the marathon. They saw them both walking very calmly in the other direction away. And then when they looked at the videos, they saw one of them had a hat on, and they saw him place a backpack in the right where the bomb went off. And And they just narrowed it down. And then when they went in pursuit of them, there was a shooting, and a policeman got killed, and the older brother was shot, but then the younger brother jumped in the car and took off and ran over the older brother. And then the younger brother was in hiding for a couple days, and an older gentleman saw everybody was in lockdown in Boston. I mean, they did an amazing job. I am very impressed with the way people listened in Boston, because you and I both know after hurricanes here in Florida and after other things that we've seen here, even after 911, people went a little bit crazy and didn't adhere to the warnings of our enforcers. And
right.
In Boston, they really did. They really stayed off the streets. The school closed. The businesses closed. Everything closed and did a shutdown. An older gentleman looks outside and sees that that something looks amiss on the boat that he has covered up for the winter, and goes out there, pulls a ladder up to it, which he shouldn't have done any of this, but he did, and I guess he's elderly. And he actually saw blood there. We don't know. I've never heard anything about whether or not this kid was conscious when the man was poking around the boat, but he ended up calling somebody and saying, you know. So then the helicopters came in. They did not approach the boat. And when they did approach the boat, they sent in the one of the guys that go in to talk to him, the
like a
mediator, like not a mediator. What do you call the people that are supposed to be able to convince you to negotiator? Yes, they brought in negotiators, and the next thing we heard was that he had been hurt. He was shot in the face, and another wound in him someplace, and he is surviving now in the hospital, and he has he's written notes and. He's not denying anything at this point in time, and but still nobody really knows why. But
so that's
Boston,
what I was just about to ask you. So he hasn't stated what the purpose of this was.
No, not really.
Wow.
Not anything that I've heard that made any sense or was I don't know, factual enough to be able to come up with any kind of a real answer to that. No.
Wow. Now that was the younger brother, or the older brother killed when he was run over?
The older, he was 25, and he was dead after that, and then the younger brother lasted another, I don't know, like maybe 24 hours, 36 hours, something like that. I'm not positive about that, but I guess the point I'm making is here you have, you know, loving parents from everything that you can see. I mean, doting almost parents. And this happened for some reason. Somebody said something to them at a time when they were, you used a word a few minutes ago, vulnerable. And they bought in. You know, they figured that was the right thing for them to do. You know, Izzy says to us all the time that when you accuse somebody of being a bully, more often than not, they think they're the ones that are being bullied.
Right. They think they're the victims.
Yes.
And that they're retaliating.
Yeah. Exactly. And that if people didn't pick on them, they wouldn't have to pick on people back. So such an amazing matter of perception, which you and I have had so many conversations about. I mean, you know, there's your truth, my truth, and the truth. So
the truth, right?
we really get that. And but it does bother me, because when we talk about kids and we talk about young people, and even when, you know, I mean, there's people that I talk to all the time that are in their 40s and they still have major confusion and don't know if what they're doing is right. And for a lot of the same reasons that you quoted in the beginning of your conversation, when you said has a lot to do with your culture, your language,
right,
your family, all those words that you said, that never changes.
That's right.
that follows us our whole life.
That's right.
Our whole life
right.
that stays
yeah.
with us and has a lot to do with the decision.
It forms our strengths
or weaknesses. It forms our
right.
strengths or weaknesses, absolutely.
Right.
But
right.
but it is about, you know, it helps us make our choices and our decisions every day, all those same things. That really never changes. So what do you think we can do? Daniel Sohn, that's in Fort Lauderdale, who's called the show a few times, would really like to be able to get involved somehow and do something about some of this. And the more I research, the more I realize that there are places now that are available. I think one of the things that we need to do is we need to let young people know that they can reach out for help without incriminating themselves, number one. And I believe that's what Safe Harbor is all about. And I think I read even on Safe Harbor, I don't know whether I shared that with everybody or I just read that to you, Shell. I don't remember, because that was the night the we kept going off the air.
Yeah. Well,
I
think it's something worth repeating, whether you said it before or not.
Yeah, let me find the piece of paper that
yeah,
I copied.
I'm actually going to when I found those two websites, like I said, I had found about a half a dozen other websites. I want to go back into them because a couple of them were for the victims. If you were somebody that suffered at the hands of human trafficking. There's actually agencies and organizations that are there to help the victims of that to get some rehabilitation, have some resources and things like that. So I didn't have a chance to read through them and find out which ones look legitimate, but I saved them on my desktop, so I'm going to go back in and do a little bit more research, like when you tell people about the 211 number, things like that. But I didn't want to put any of those out on your radio show until I had a chance to read their mission statements and try to figure out which ones are legit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and I'm not seeing the one that I pulled up on the Safe Harbor. I do have, here it is. It's right in front of my face. It's hell to get old, everybody. Remember that. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. Too close to my face.
Yeah,
that's it. The Safe Harbor Act went into effect January 1st, 2013. It helps ensure the safety of child victims who have been trafficked for sex and allows children who are rescued from prostitution to get help from child welfare professionals instead of being placed in juvenile delinquency. This allows the Department of Children and Families, the Department of Juvenile Justice, law enforcement, and our local partners across the state to treat and help the victims of this abuse. They will receive intensive treatment in residential settings that are already being prepared for their safety and success. The Safe Harbor Act passed by the 2012 legislature and signed into law by Governor Rick Scott. So, on that note, too, I think I've mentioned before the amazing assistant district attorney in Fort Lauderdale in the Broward County court system. She's in charge of the juvenile division, and
mm-hmm.
she's amazing. She has her own teenage son, and she gets what is going on with kids because she's involved with her own, and she knows what kind of bad opportunities are out there for them, and she knows what kind of different problems that can arise because of everything that's out there for a young person. And I don't care whether you're in church or in school or at home or where you are. There's things available to kids that were never available to them 50 years ago. I think we all get that. But
oh,
she's
yeah.
wonderful.
As far as what's supposed to.
Yes.
Right.
she is really involved, and she's been working with some organizations in California that are actually trying to figure out a way to deal with juvenile offenders. And, of course, the goal always, to my knowledge and recollection, was when you put somebody in jail or in prison or incarcerated them for any reason, many, many years ago, they decided it was to get them better, to, you know, to help them turn their lives around, to take them away from what was making them do the things that got them put away to begin with, and let them pay society for their mistakes and get some additional education, which is available to all of the inmates in almost every prison that I know of in the United States, and even in some cases learn a trade and then turn them back out into the world, you know, a more responsible part of our citizenship. So
right.
With kids, though, it has to be handled a little bit differently, obviously. And they're working on that, and they're working on, not that she's not in favor, I don't think. She's never said this to me, so I maybe shouldn't put words in her mouth. But I don't think anybody that works in this system, let's put it that way instead of just saying it about her, let's say that I think anybody that works in the system sees some really awful things, and they do think that, you know, you reap what you sow. So if you're going to do the act, you better be prepared to pay the consequences. I don't think it's about letting people off easy. I think it's about having it make a difference instead of just having them put away and paying to feed them, clothe them, and educate them for however many years and then let them come out and be a repeat offender. I think that's where her heart is at. She would like to see them. I think one night when I was reading statistics, I talked about when a young person who starts out being somebody who, you know, accosts everybody that comes in their path. I'm trying not to use the word bully so much because it doesn't seem to cover enough of the territory for me. But if they're an aggressive child and they get into trouble, the whole idea is to help them, is to put them in a better place, not to get them a little bit harder and a little bit trickier and then let them out again.
Right, right.
You know, so I think the people that are really involved in that arena, that's what they'd like to see happen. They'd like to see a difference made and a more positive difference. And I know I would. I mean, I can speak firsthand about having somebody that I care about be hurt and know that somebody else is going to get punished for it. I didn't feel any joy the day the boys got punished. None at all. I, as a matter of fact, it's a very mixed emotion because you want to say, you know, the first thing you want to say is, what the hell were you thinking and how could you do that? And, of course, there are no answers, but it doesn't bring you any relief or any joy. Now, if it's one of those kind of situations where somebody is being badgered, you know, like some of the stories that we see on TV where somebody is stalked and badgered and harassed and everything for years and somebody gets punished, that seems to be a little bit different. But like even DUI accidents, you know, I don't get any joy out of seeing those people go to jail or anything like that. I want them to be okay.
Right. But there does have to be consequences. Otherwise, there's, you know, unfortunately, there are some people that are going to live a life that's like on the straight and narrow just because that's who they are, but other people need to know that there's consequences in order to keep them in line, you know.
Yeah.
So if if there was no consequence, you'd really have just total chaos, you know,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
I get that. But, and I know that this has to exist. I mean, you know, I'm a big advocate of getting young people to read The Lord of the Flies for that reason.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I don't know.
I understand exactly where you're coming from. It's not a good thing for me.
Yeah.
No, of course not. And that's because you have compassion for both sides of the equation. You know, as we've spoken about many times on this, you know, when you have somebody who's a perpetrator of a crime, you know, people don't commit crimes because they're happy and contented. They commit crimes because there's something not okay with their life. They either feel society owes them something, or, you know, I mean, but there's anger or sadness or greed. But I mean, these are all dysfunctional emotional patterns, and they surface for reasons because that's what they were exposed to. So, you know what I'm saying? I mean, so there's something not right with that person, and It doesn't excuse their behavior, but it does put a sense of compassion out there, which means, and it doesn't mean that they don't have to suffer consequence, but what it means is that you don't take any pleasure from that consequence. It's necessary to draw a line in the sand and say, look, you can't cross this without having some negative impact. But a compassionate person wouldn't then take joy out of the consequence that individual suffered then, even though it was at their own hands.
Right. Well, and I think the problem, though, of course, is I hear a lot of people say, oh, good, that's what they deserved, and they should have been shot. And, I mean, some of the comments that were made to me after those kids hurt Mike, I mean, I would be like, from people that, like, I'd have never believed in a million years that they would say something like that. And I think to myself, they're just saying that to let me know that they're supporting us. Is what I thought, you know, because I can't. Why would anybody? It just doesn't make sense to me. If you meet a hardened, horrible, you know, like some of the shows that they have on TV now that you and I always watch, you know, Law and Order and Criminal Minds and all that. These psychopathic killers. That's another story entirely. But people who do stupid things or make stupid choices, you know, I don't know. It's supposed to be, that's what I always believed. I remember reading in the history books that when they came up with prisons and things like that, it's because you stole my horse or you pilfered some of my cattle or, you know, and you owed me money. And if you couldn't pay me the money, you got put in jail. So jail actually started out being more like a debtor's punishment than anything else. You know, if you killed somebody, they just hung you. You didn't go to jail for any length of time. They just hung you.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you committed a real crime, like taking someone else's life or something, they just took yours. And like Izzy said the other day, he said, you know, it's more like an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, even in the Bible, you know. And that's how it started out. But now it's grown into a whole other business, the prisons and the reforming part of our government, which, quite honestly, according to their own statistics, isn't working anyway. So let's ask everybody out there to think about some of the things that can be done. We are still going to have an event, and as soon as we get the date organized and the venue organized, we'll let everyone know. But these are some of the things that I want to have at this event, ideas about how to help kids that are on the street, information from all the Safe Harbor and all the places where a child could go for help and not feel, you know, like they're not going to be cared about or things aren't going to change for them. So, well, thank you, Shell. That was a lot of good information, and I think we'll keep this kind of an open topic because I think it will keep growing, and we'll both keep bringing in little tidbits of research, and we'll do another show soon and maybe invite Danny and a couple of his guys in if they have some more information gathered. So thank you. I love you, and I love all of you out there, and I hope everybody has a wonderful evening. So from my heart to yours, good night, everybody.
Good night, Renee. Good night, everyone.
Good night, honey.